This is exactly right.
Hi, I'm Erin Welsh.
And I'm Erin Alman Updike, and we're the hosts of This Podcast Will Kill You on Exactly Right.
We're back with our seventh season, which is bigger and better than ever.
Because guess what? We're now a weekly show.
This season, we're tackling everything from long COVID to norovirus, from the supplement industry to IVF, and so, so much more.
New episodes drop every single Tuesday.
Follow This Podcast Will Kill You wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you leaving or are you on your way back home? Either way, we want to be there. Doesn't matter how much baggage you claim, give us a time and date, terminal and gate. We want to send you off in style. We want to welcome you back home. Tell us all about it. Were you scared or was it fine?
With Karen and Chris.
Welcome to Do You Need a Ride? This is Chris Fairbanks.
And this is Karen Kilgariff.
Hello, my friend.
Chris, today I had a beehive removed from my backyard.
I had something ready. You had a beehive removed?
The reason I busted into mine is because you always do yours.
Right.
I think the bee news is breaking. I feel like a beehive removal is breaking news. So I just ran out first with it.
Did you, up to this point, have some sort of a bee problem because of the hive? I imagine you did.
Well, it's just that I had to get my trees trimmed and the tree trimmer said, I'm not doing it if that beehive is there. And I said, I get you. I'm on your side, sir. So I had to have it removed before they would go and trim trees.
It's pretty presumptuous of him, though, because what if you were a beekeeper and you were trying to make your own at-home honey?
I was wearing the whole netted hat.
Yeah, of course
I don't know why he thought he could impinge on my life that way, but I started to think, because the man came to my door and said, I got the queen, I got the honeycomb, everything's out. It's going to take a couple days and then the bees will be gone. And then I was like, what if that's bad?
Right. Yeah. You don't know about bee hierarchy. You take the queen away.
Yeah, well, they're not going to stick around. But like, what if bees, I don't know. It feels like it might be bad luck to lose bees.
Oh, yeah.
Chris, what do you think?
I think it's a very end of the world thing. We need to appreciate all the bees that we find because it's been years now that we've just seen them limping on sidewalks and you should have embraced them and taken them into your home.
Shit,
if you wanted my opinion, you got
it. Shit. Fuck. Here's the thing. I can rely on you to tell me the truth about. Basically, if I thought things were bad now, just wait to see now that the bees are gone.
Yeah, I have to bring in an environmental twist. Well, before we bring in our guest, I want to talk about the person that visited my house right before this. A man peeked in my window.
Oh.
And I guess he couldn't see me, but I was looking right at him, and then he hung a flyer, and I realized he was the guy on the flyer. Why, it was Kenneth Mejia. He's running for LA City Controller, not Comptroller. Controller, and he himself did his own flyering.
Okay, he gets my vote simply by the fact that he showed up.
I do like that. I do like that he hit the streets and did it old school like a Cutco knife salesman. However, it says his credentials are 11 years of auditing experience. Now, that's not someone I want peeking in my windows. I'm a little nervous.
But if he's going to be the controller, isn't that the perfect experience?
Well, I think I'm going to get audited now. Why else would he be peeking in my window?
you saw your unpaid taxes laying on your desk.
I just have a giant stack of papers with an IRS please ignore sign on top. I'm screwed.
In the ignore pile.
Well, you know what I didn't ignore is my link to screen our guest's HBO Max comedy special. They call me the best segwayer in the business. I don't even know if segwayer is a word. It's a whole world.
It's a world that you live in.
It's out now. And after you hear him on our podcast, you're going to want to watch it because I find him to be one of the most talented comedian minds working today. You've seen him at clubs and colleges.
Clubs and colleges.
So many colleges.
Yeah.
A troubling amount of colleges.
Just a creepy
not on the bill.
Amount.
There was a really bad college I did. Where
wait, no one said your name.
It's fine.
This is Moses Storm talking, everyone. Moses Storm.
Moses Storm.
Every time I start a sentence, I'm like, Moses Storm here. they, for promotion, I think it was like right after the last Comic Standing, which was like, let's try to hide that credit. But the college to promote the show that was happening, because it's just like students, you know, they don't really do things. They spray painted my name on a mattress. over it. I was like, this is like a fun billboard. But on college campuses, if you spray paint a mattress, it's a sign of protest of people that are victims of sexual assault. That's like their protest. So it was the hands down worst promotion is my yeah. name on a mattress.
Borderline accusatory.
Yeah.
There's an element to it.
Yeah.
You don't want to be involved.
The bad guy's name is actually on the mattress. This is going to be easy. I know where he lives.
I know.
I did a college once in, I believe, Arkansas. I was incredibly terrible. It was outside in like at night outside. I was standing in a gazebo. The children were over on a hill. There was a sign that had my name on it. And about 20 minutes into my absolutely silent set, one side of the sign with my name on it just kind of fell down. And then I went, you know what, guys? I'm going to take that as a sign. Good night, everybody.
Was it the kill part of your name? Oh, that's so sad.
It just went away.
Outside is insane that anyone would think that would work. But that's all we did for the past 2 years.
Well, you paid for that gazebo.
Yeah,
you gotta use it for something. Jazz band hasn't been.
Did you know going in? Because sometimes I'll go to a college and they're like, "We have you in the corner of the cafeteria where we make echoes." Right. Sometimes you kind of know. Sometimes they'll show you a photo now, and you're like, "Okay, this is a paycheck, so
right.
I'm going to stand on top of a Honda Civic and yell."
I had no warning, and they're not actually allowed to do that because it's so bad for comedy, as we all know, that it has to be indoors. It's like contractually, whatever. And I remember standing in a very florally wallpapered tiny bathroom before I went on, almost having a panic attack because I was like, there's no way this can be good. I'm walking into what absolutely will be and was a terrible attempt at personality comedy with not enough hard jokes to please the children of Arkansas. It was rough.
Right. How long did it take for them to figure out you weren't doing announcements? It wasn't like coming up in the spring because it's all freshmen. Because if you're, you know, crushing it in college, you don't have time to go to some comedy show. So it's all freshmen who are, people are like, you ever hook up with college girls? No, they're children. The 18-year-olds are 12. They're, in my mind, they have braces. This is a child. And they are anxious. If you're out, you don't want to be alive. And you're nervous because you're not with anyone that you know. It's the worst environment for a comedian to thrive in. And then they usually have students bring you up. So they haven't built a show yet. It's just someone coming up who doesn't want to be on stage, but does all the announcements. They'll say usually your full bio. They'll say your name first. It'll be like, Chris Fairbanks. You know him from Fuel TV. He was in a controversial campaign. Very commercial. Like, what? And then you'll kind of come up when they have finished the paragraph that's on your website.
It's my favorite when they just Google your name and find a bio from the very beginning of your career. He got a
anything
start.
Anything flew as a credit. Anything was like he tested for a pilot. You're like, oh, so you didn't get a job. Karen, you are you're lucky enough to be a successful podcaster. Did you have to do any of the outdoor or Zoom shows that we all did in the lockdown?
I did a couple of the Chris and I have talked about it because I agreed to do one because Chris was doing it. It was like Quiplash. It was, you know, so it was not outdoor, it was Zoom. I did a couple of those. So it was game based. It wasn't like doing a set.
Sean O'Connor's one, right?
Was one by one of those guys, and then there was another one that Louis Katz did, maybe.
Yeah, it was. It was a lot. There's a lot of dueling Quiplash shows.
There's some Quiplashes, which I thought it's a game, so that's fine. But then I just went, what am I doing? I'm let somebody else have that spot.
In the middle of doing all these Zoom shows, I go on Instagram and I see Moses performing in the middle of the beat, in the water, in the ocean, diving into waves in a wetsuit. I have people with tiki torches laughing as the life-giving breeze of the ocean hits them.
You can't say tiki torches with my face. You need to clarify that. That needs to be qualified. I did a show ocean. I did a show at the ocean, and it went exactly as well as you thought. And I thought it was funny to wear a suit the whole time. And then I was like, I just need to fit in. I need to get. So I jumped in the water right before this. Like I was like, said hello, jumped in the water, came back. And then, you know how sometimes adrenaline will take over. Even if you have the flu, you could perform, you could catch your breath. You're not tired anymore once you're on stage. Not the case. The entire set, I was so, so cold. It's the middle of winter and I couldn't catch my breath the entire set.
Great
dripping in a suit, in an H&M suit, where the fabric is just made of different rashes.
Yeah, you've done some impressive physical. The last time I did, I had the pleasure of trying to follow you at the Improv, but were you up in the rafters? It was like performance on Saturday Night Live where he's up in the fan. You were up in the rafters and then slid down the handrail perfectly, like mid-joke, and landed and did the punchline, right? It was really impressive, physically.
I'm a jazz boy.
You are a jazz boy?
You doesn't always work out, though. I did fall one story off of the new Improv, like their upper level. I fell one story right on my hip.
You're kidding. Yeah. When was this?
It was pretty early. I was very excited to be back indoors again.
Yeah.
It's pretty early on, and I was trying to get back down, and they're new there. The staircase that's in there, at least the second floor, is relatively new, so the booths that are behind it are not bolted down, and I was trying to get one foot on the back of the booth so I could eventually climb down. Very loose, and then just fell one story, and then had about 6 more minutes left, so I wasn't going to bail, so I did the rest of the set.
Did you?
Did they?
Was it like, it's fine, I'm fine?
Yeah, I have like maybe 3 more years before everything is going to be unhealable. It's just going to be like, I don't have a left hip anymore.
One time at the old Luna Park, which no one knows it anymore, but they had this kind of old fashioned stage where if you walked up to it and stood there, it was probably like mid chest on the average person, pretty high up. And I was doing this show and I was the host. So I ran out. No one introduced me. They just go out there. So I saw there was a doorway with like long tinsely stuff in the doorway. So I go, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to run up to the stage and introduce myself, run out into that waiting area, and then walk on and take the stage.
Yeah.
So I did that. Ladies and gentlemen, here she is, Karen Kilgariff. Ran over. There was no floor. It was an empty room. It was like a 4-foot drop into a room with no lights on, filled with folding chairs. And as I was falling, I went, you have to get back up and go back out there immediately. You can't just have fallen. So I fell and then just turned and like somehow propelled myself back up on stage. And I had sprained my ankle, but I just was like, whatever. And then there's a guy in the front row and I'm like, thanks everybody. And there's a guy in the front row who was crying, laughing. And I looked at him and I go, you saw what just happened, huh? And he goes, he was dying and no one else knew. Like they just thought there was like a slight pause and a chair sound.
Were you did you feel the full impact of the pain while you're performing, or was it you got off. You're like, it's broken.
It was, I mean, I would say I just did like 5 minutes and then introduced the first person and got backstage and was like, I have fully sprained my ankle. But in the moment, I didn't feel anything because I was like, you have to go back out there. And I somehow turned and like, it was really high. I just like propelled myself back up.
Right. Cause we're so desperate to get that attention that we're like, it's like a mom lifting a car off her child. Yes. And we're like, my 3 minute set, I must get a laugh.
I
can jump like a
cat. I can't lose.
Come before me. I could jump twice my body height. I've broken a foot jumping off the stage at, it's the hot tub. Stage
really?
Oh yeah, bar. The Virgil.
Yeah, and you had jumping off of that one.
Fully.
Yeah, I didn't feel till after, and I had to work the next day, so I was limping in every scene. That was a bad one because it's a foot, so it doesn't really heal if you keep walking on it, and you're like, you need this job. Yeah.
Did you
that
work?
Was a bad one. I had a lot of people at the show too. That's a hurt.
Yeah.
From work. See you tomorrow, Limpy.
Yeah, it's a bunch of work. No, it was like 12 people.
Yeah. Oh, that always makes... When you're injured, it's so fun when there's a dozen people there to just add that extra kiss of evaluate your life in this moment. One time opening for Daniel Tosh, I was drunk on stage. It was 15 years ago. And it was at the Punchline in Sacramento. They just had one step up to the stage. There was just a box that someone had made. It was not adhered to the floor.
Yeah.
And I was having a terrible set. I recognized someone from my childhood in the audience. And I said, are you from Montana? And he shook his head no. And I'm like, didn't have anywhere to go with it. So I'm like, good. I thought you were this guy I went to high school with that I didn't like. And in that moment, I realized it was him. He just lied and pretended
didn't
it wasn't.
Didn't want to be a part of the show. He's like, and I don't, lie. Don't rope me into this.
Yeah. And I just got off stage out of embarrassment. And my heel stepped on this box and it barrel rolled under me. Like a log in one of those challenges you see on ESPN. I just landed on this box and it broke under my ass, just all sides of it. And then I got mad. The audience kind of laughed and then I yelled at them for laughing and then just had to walk through. It was the worst. And I was hurt all week. I love that
happened at the Punchline, a chain of comedy clubs, like one of the biggest comedy club chains there is.
Yeah.
They don't have one step up to the stage.
It was just a free floating box and cross your fingers and go heels first into it.
At the quality that is a comedy club, that all the furniture would be sound. Did someone from the club come up to me? You're going to pay for that box.
Yeah.
Hey, Chris, you might have snapped your heel
that
on
comes
ours.
Out of
you
your, might have that comes out of your pay.
Yeah. Yeah. During Daniel's set, you could hear the slight hammering of me fixing it in the green room while crying. I
always feel like shit when I broke a clock at Helium in Portland.
Oh,
I was climbing
God.
Over that wall, and the other side of the wall was just a glass clock. So it sounded way worse than it was, but I bought them a clock. They were very nice about it, but that made me feel even worse that they were so polite about it. But yeah, I went to Target, got them a new clock.
Yeah, they are historically the most polite comedy club in America. It's okay that you broke our things. We're Portland.
Chris, I feel like you've tried bits in auditions. Have you ever had to clean something up? That's a humiliating part of any bit is having you do some big thing in the room and then you have to clean it up.
Yeah, sorry, I knocked all these papers off your desk.
Yeah.
Oh, look, that one's my headshot that you won't ever look at again.
Uh-huh. Already in the no pile.
Did you have a job at Conan?
I was, I was like floating boy. It was never an official writing job. It's just like that boy around. We don't know what you do. We pity you and we want to do something with you. So yeah, I would host. I think the main job was running all the shows so it would warm Conan up for the tour because he had been a while since he had done live stuff. So
right.
The main job was hosting anything that that would help him get prepped for the tour. So that meant even charity gigs. And then the show at Dynasty, and then there'd be like video game streams that happen for 24 hours that come in that, but not an official title. It's just like always around there, just like, hey, learn the ropes here.
I want Floating Boy to be the name of your job.
It's much more magical than just what it is of like that guy that's around. And then people were like, oh my God, you're going to take over Conan. You're going to, it's like, it's not the Tonight Show. You can't take over Conan. There's no such thing.
It's a person's name.
It's his show. Yeah.
Boy, one day they're going to manufacture a suit that looks like Conan and you're going to climb into it and pretend to be him.
I'm going to run Conan. We're never going to address it. It's an odd enough name where I could just host the show and no one would ever ask, why is it called Conan? It's like 80 years down the line.
Did you start as a PA? I mean, like, were you on the staff somehow?
No, no. JP saw Chris Redd and I performing at Meltdown and asked us to do a pre-show at Comic-Con, which meant we performed outside on the roof.
Good. Mm-hmm.
And we did like a 24-hour show that would happen with like any time, like, oh, the cast of Teen Wolf is in and around the area. They can't be on the real show, but they could go up on the roof in San Diego.
Jesus. Did you show up and you were like, what, no gazebo?
I was ecstatic to be there. I was like, shit in my pants, so nervous. Yeah. Chris was like, yeah, this is bullshit. he had options. He was like on a Chuck Lorre show. And then, we interviewed people in the sun. And then Conan would come up there with us and just sort of tell people like, this is a thing and don't tune out. And that went well. So I got to do the show. And then ever since then, I just have worked there just as a performer, a hired hand. But I've never done it actually like productive work as far as I move anything there.
Yeah, he just obviously likes you, which is cool.
That's all it takes.
And I don't even know if this is a good thing to bring up because, as I recall, it ends with a visual, which you had a bunch of in your special.
Yeah.
But
you can blow the bit.
Can you? Yes, I am going to blow it. Can you just talk about the tapes that you recorded over that?
This is a very real story. So we were not allowed to watch TV growing up, extremely religious growing up. So any TV was like, that is the devil. So the one thing we were kind of allowed to watch was musical performances, because if my older brothers learned music, that would be a way to praise God. So sometimes my mom would let them record late night shows because of the musical guests that they would have.
Oh,
that's okay. How I found out about Conan. I got addicted to the show and needed a way to watch it. So I found this homeschool program with a heavy Christian slant. It makes Narnia look tame. And they send you these Christian tapes where science is taught to you with a real wink, a begrudging science class. And I took those tapes so I could get a VCR and a TV in my room. And I would record his show at night, put a tape in, press record, turn the TV off. And then in the morning, pretend I was doing school, but I was, you know, fast forwarding Leno and trying to watch his show as I hover over the TV. Being an idiot 11-year-old is a subscription model. You send the tapes back every month.
Oh.
And I thought, if the worst comes to worst, someone at the Christian School Academy, they're going to be upset. No, they blindly send those tapes to other kids. So you rewind them and they don't look at them. They don't quality control them. So other kids would be watching a science class where they're like, photosynthesis is caused by the devil. That would cut out and it'd be like the FedEx Pope, or it'd be, you know, Walker Texas Ranger clips.
Masturbating bear.
Yeah.
Oh, God, that's the best.
So enough people complained to the program, like the tapes are damaged. And then it got so bad that eventually the program, they contacted my mom. And said that we had damaged all of these tapes.
And the reveal is, Karen, I don't know if you saw it on Conan, and he's like, and I have one of the tapes here.
Yeah.
And it's just someone giving a boring science lecture. And then there's static. And then it's Conan, like in a cowboy costume dancing. It was the best.
Sorry to question it, but you knew it was a subscription model after the first time and you kept doing it?
Oh, no. I mean, this only happened, like, you have to understand, like, it takes such a while, such a slow program. It's just like a woman in Pensacola that's running the whole thing. So it took a while for this to catch up. If it was like even like what Netflix was in 2008, oh my God, yeah, I would have been found out within a week. But no, it was such a slow program because it took multiple students complaining. And I think some kids probably didn't even complain. Like, yeah, it's homeschool. You're obviously being neglected. You put these tapes on. You're like, oh, I guess I'll watch this. It's not some boring lecture.
But so, it was for homeschool kids primarily.
Yeah.
Which you were homeschooled.
That's generous. No school, essentially. I think I learned how to read and write officially at 16/18 and then still struggle today. Like if I do a table read now, I'm like, I know it's scripts under locks, but I do need to look at it before.
Yeah. Well, didn't you say in your special that you just found out that you have dyslexia?
Yeah.
That's insane. Before,
there's so much insecurity around not being able to read and write. It's the most embarrassing thing. So
I just pretend I'm not interested in it. That's worked for me.
Book is boring.
Dumb.
It's just not a good one.
Right. So, yeah, it took me a while to be like, okay, now I'm actually putting the effort in to learn how to read. I've gotten hooked on phonics off of eBay and started with rudimentary. That's hard. That's hard when you're like shaving and you're listening to Hooked on Phonics. But so then I officially got tested. By my therapist recommended a psychologist and then did a series of tests and then found out not only am I dyslexic, but I'm also dysgraphic, which is the order of things. So if you were to tell me a phone number, I couldn't then transmute that into a written language. So it's the two worst things on top of the worst education.
Wow. That's so, because you've made up for it in other ways. You seem to me to be a high functioning brained person. And that's something that was worded in a way that I'm admitting that I'm not. High functioning brained person?
High functioning word person.
You are
me too good at words.
You're a high talking quality man.
Yeah, it's possible with technology to not be entirely literate because there's things like there's programs that can read for you.
Yeah.
Or just put double the work in. I can't cold read a script. I'd have to memorize the entire thing. Because I'm not going to sound it out. If I do those bad like MTV clip shows where you read a teleprompter, I come in the day before and I memorize the entire half hour script, all the blocks.
Did you always do that kind of secretively or were you just openly like, I have a reading thing that's
once
happening?
Once you got a name for your disorder, ooh, sky's the limit. I'm not mean. I'm mentally unwell. $10 word, I can be a piece of shit. Yeah. the liberation of having a name and of the disorder has been, it's great. Because now I can just tell producers up front, of, you know, hey, I have this disorder and can't discriminate.
Yeah, I think I should probably see what I have. I'm pretty certain, just looking back on my life, that I have some version of ADD. Would you guess that, Karen? You know me.
About you?
Yeah, I think I
do. Sure. Yeah.
So I should be taking...
Well, I have a feeling, though, that most people that go into comedy is there's something about us where it's like we just, first of all, we need to feel special and different, but it's because we are special and different. So whatever that kind of thing is, it's like there's nothing more independent, self-sustaining, kind of like self-propelling or whatever than stand up. Like no one can tell you how to do it. No one can tell you like anything about it. You just get to do it the way you do it. And you have to figure out how to do it well enough so that it's successful. So it's kind of the perfect thing for anyone, whether it's like a reading issue or a personality disorder, or like for me, I just wanted to figure out how to smoke pot all the time.
Sure.
And so like it, and yet still like seem successful or like I was doing something like the partying aspect. So I just think it's kind of like, yeah, it would make perfect sense.
Yeah. I one time working, I making that world's dumbest show. I would get so overwhelmed by everything. And someone said, here, try this Adderall. It'll help you focus. And I've never felt more normal before. And everything was easier for me. And I'm like, oh, okay. I'm someone that maybe requires this pill. And that was 5 years ago. I haven't looked back. I have never.
You're still on Adderall. Yeah.
I have not. I've taken it once in my life. Oh. And that was one of the best days of my life. Yet I still.
Because it sounds like you do need it. I think for people that actually do need it, you don't have the meth/cocaine effect where you're like, yeah, I'm going to clean my closet. It's just a normal, I'm focused. Now I can read this thing.
Yeah, if
anything, and then a terrible come down. But
Right.
Are you afraid of having a dependency on a drug?
I'm afraid that, like Karen was saying, if I end up taking something like that, all of a sudden the urgency and frantic energy I use to do stand-up will be gone and I'll no longer be funny. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Very possible.
Yeah.
Very similar to me being afraid the bees are going to be taken away.
Oh,
what
the
if
bees.
That was, I'm scared the bees are taken away and now I'm not funny.
Yeah, that was the secret to everything. And
the, this beehive that's 20 feet down a hill away from my house.
Yeah. I never watched that movie with Tom Hanks where all the bees come out of that guy's mouth. What was up with that?
Oh, I don't know. I just know the scene from The Mummy is where it's all the bugs.
Yeah,
is that
there's
what you're
so
saying?
Many bees.
Oh, you're talking about The Green Mile?
Yes, thank you.
Oh.
Yeah. Bees fly out of his mouth. And I remember ceasing to watch it after that moment.
You might need Adderall.
Yeah, maybe I do.
And you need it right now. The thing is, can you
commercial.
Get some now?
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't like the way it made me feel after. I was like, this is not good. It's whatever the benefit I would get from reading. And it's different for everyone. It sounds like it's bad. It's just like,
you had like a hangover.
I was like, oh, the come down is awful.
Wow.
Because it does focus you and you do get a little bit of a joy, a little bit of a boost that would help you not get frustrated. Because I read now, I get physical headaches.
Right.
And everything in your childhood comes up with the frustration of like, why didn't my parents take care of me and think you should probably be in school? So it does help you power through that. But then there's just awful come down. You're essentially borrowing tomorrow's joy for today.
Moses, will you talk a little bit about your childhood? I know you don't want to like blow jokes from your special, but at the same time,
no,
it is incredibly fascinating how you grew up.
I mean, it's like what I'm working on now. It's part two. We barely scratched the surface in this special just because it's the end of time. And I don't know, it takes a lot of talent to make some of that stuff funny. And I'm just not talented enough as a comedian to make it work. Very religious parents, they joined a doomsday cult in the 90s. And it wasn't a famous one. I don't think they had a name called The Way, but then there's a way more successful cult called The Way. And so they just dropped the name and they never renamed it because they don't believe in themselves. So then for most of my life, there's three families in the cult, a lot of kids in each of the families. I suspect that they just had kids to fill out the membership. And we traveled around. Each of the families had a bus, like a Greyhound bus that very shabby, but converted that into a home. And we would tour around the United States unofficially and street preach. We would have big neon signs that say you're headed for hell. And the younger the kid that's yelling fire and brimstone, the more of an interest catcher it is. So
that was your first performing.
Yeah. First performance. It was exactly like a college show. Outside, yelling at the top of my lungs.
People ignoring you.
Not really comprehending what the words "you're headed for hell" means. I just know that mommy wants you to do that. So I remember, people hated us. You're yelling, people are like, I'm a Christian. They're like, no, it's not Christianity. You're going to burn. So people would spit on us. They throw beer at us, which is like, what? Even if someone's saying you don't like something, that's a kid. Yeah, they'd moon us. They were very
moon you
when you tell them that they're gonna die and it's all over.
It's a slippery slope, mooning kids.
Yeah.
I've never done it myself, but that was a bad choice. But they were drunk on beer, I guess.
But hey, we got to go to spring break.
You drove through Daytona Beach?
We got to go to Lollapalooza, the outside part of the gate.
Really? So was it like you kind of strategically chose places where, big groups of people were singing?
It was really based on what we could afford, which was not a lot of travel. People were like, you got to go everywhere. It's like, we spent a lot of time in Florida and North Carolina and Ohio. And then, I would try to be around bigger events, or we would stick around another week if something was coming up. It's something as small as a festival. Lollapalooza is probably the biggest example, but sometimes it could just be a fun run for The Cure. When I feel like shut him out to this day. He was like, this is for Nana. He's got cancer. You're going to burn and Nana's going to burn. Oh, God. Basically, anywhere there was a crowd, we were there. And it was about, it's called witnessing. Witnessing for God anywhere and everywhere. So if you're at Walmart, the idea was like you would just feel this push on your back. It reminded me of a goat. And you'd have to give someone some neon track. It was a religious pamphlet that I had no idea what it says and probably still don't know what it says. And yeah, you just have to tell them that they're headed for hell. And then I had no backup from there.
So as a kid, did you just kind of went through the motions? It's, you probably weren't like a hardcore believer in everything that you were being told to do, right?
We were terrified. I mean, it wasn't so like brain dead, go through the motion. It was just like, oh shit, yeah, I guess I'll do this. I don't want to be in trouble.
Oh, wow.
And then all my siblings are doing it and we're isolated from everyone else. So that's your entire reality. There's very little barometers for like, hey, this isn't normal because those kids, they have Christmas.
Yeah.
And they go to school. Once I got to, I don't know, 8, 9, 10, you started looking around and like, oh, the kids are in school. We're not allowed to talk to anyone. This is odd. And then you see your parents getting yelled at a grocery store, not even for witnessing sometimes. Sometimes just for shoplifting, just bad behavior and not paying rent at a campground. So early on, the people that are supposed to be your authority figures, you very early on was like, oh, they don't got me. These are people that do not have me. So then the paradigm starts to shift. You start to think a little bit more for yourself. Once you come to that awakening that those people aren't the arbiters of truth. Those aren't authority figures. Everyone in the world is not happy with them. But then I believed I was going to hell up until I was 16.
The hell thing is, just as being raised Catholic, obviously very different, but there's that thing where it's kind of like, but the rationale that they give you does hold up for a while, where it's like just walking away doesn't feel right because there is, you know, the understanding is it's all throughout your life. So it's just like that idea of totally turning your back on a thing that was built in. Is a hard thing to do.
That's hard to be like, I was wrong for so long. It's scary. And it's scary now to not have any set faith thing of just be like, oh, you die and there's nothing. So I don't believe in nothing. I'm also not an annoying Bill Maher, the man in the sky. Who's gonna, yeah. It's like, well, that helps a lot of people out.
So yeah, yeah.
What do you know, coffee breath? I wish I had something in my life. Like, I wish self-help worked on me. Like, I wish Eckhart Tolle was something that was like, yeah, that makes me feel good.
Eckhart Tolle, though, the simplicity of that, I don't, you know, that like sit on a bench and stare concept. It's like, I do need more direction. Sorry.
It is a privilege of the rich, too, to be able to sit on a bench and be present, meditate. If you're a single mom with 5 kids, you're gonna yell that. There's not a lot of time to meditate.
No, not at all. Or even have any quiet at all.
Yeah. I think a lot of self-help is geared towards people with a privileged life. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with that. But when you become privileged, your problems are less. It's more just like self-worth. What am I even doing with my life? You have time to examine those other things. But if the landlord is at your door, if there's a threat, if there's like, oh, we can't go in that room because the one of the rooms is overtaken by mice and roaches, which is a thing, that's what we were focused on. It wasn't, there was no time to be like, what does it all mean?
Everything I want to follow this up with is from your special. And like Karen said, I don't want you to burn
it. I don't care. But I don't care about the people blowing it. Who cares?
The most memorable thing is that your mom dyed all the kids' hair blonde so it to confuse the landlord that there was only one kid. If I make them all look the same and to make it seem like she was a natural blonde. Look, all my kids are blonde. Those two reasons, I don't know which is better.
This is 100% true. That was the first time I did that second part of the joke. Because we had all these stop downs because so many things went wrong during the taping. The first part of the joke where it's supposed to end is my mom dyed all 5 of her kids blonde because she didn't want anyone knowing that she herself was not a natural blonde.
Right.
Even a serial killer on the run from the law would be like, that's too much. I'm not going to Gone Girl my kids with hair dye. Now, in the process of setting up the special, I ran everything by her because I was like, "What? Well, is this someone that didn't sign up to be in the entertainment industry?"
Yeah.
And even though it's my life and my experience, I think there is some sort of responsibility that you have to be like, "Hey, I'm going to do this. You're not going to be embarrassed on a giant streaming service. But let me just tell you what I'm doing." So then in that process of talking about the hair dye, she goes, "Oh yeah, but it wasn't," this is like about to tape the special. She goes, "Oh, it wasn't just because of that. Yeah, sure. I wanted not people to not know I was a fake blonde, but we were about to be evicted from a one bedroom apartment. And I was trying to make all you five kids look like one kid."
So your mom wrote that joke.
Yeah. And it was just the fact, like, I could never think of a specific that would top that of like, that's like when you're at the carnival. It's like, that is it.
That's genius. Wait,
yeah.
Is your mom now out of that belief system, or has that changed for her?
There's like a tether to the past of that. I wonder how much she believes about it. But I think as far as the cult leader, James, I don't know she's in contact with him. I mean, one of the really genius things that the cult leader did is that she was never in. You always keep people at arm's distance. If you never are accepted, he's never like you were saved. So it keeps you wanting his affection. It keeps you wanting to try harder, send him more money. When her grandmother died, she gave him all the inheritance money.
Oh, wow.
So she was never accepted. So maybe there's something liberating in all of us kids being like, that guy wasn't right. Okay. And remember when he came in to the house and he humiliated you in front of all of us and said that you don't need to listen to your mom anymore. She's a witch. She's going to burn. That's not right. So there's some scarring there, where I think she still, if he came back and was like, "You're accepted," she'd go back. But I think overall, no, she's leveled out. She's remarried. She's in an RV again, but this time a company did the conversion. And, I think it's a lot healthier now.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
And she's spending her 60s just apologizing to everyone and trying to make up for the past and trying to be a really good grandma.
Yeah.
And a lot of people have scars from the past and they're still taking their time to come around. But overall, yeah, she has learned, 30 years later from her mistakes.
That's great. I mean, that's rare.
Yeah.
I do know that she has to be funny, though, because the trying to get you guys on America's Funniest Home Videos is not
a job,
like, a serious idea. Like, we have to take this seriously.
As a job. That's what's so funny is the stakes are so high. So one of our jobs growing up mainly was dumpster diving and then selling the junk at a yard sale that was a pop-up at sometimes other people's front lawns. Because we couldn't keep doing it out of the trailer park. No one wants to come to a trailer park. So we would just set up on other people's yards. There's that grass right before the curb. That's the property.
This isn't technically your yard, sir.
Yeah. People are very confused, but you're out front. And they're like, what the? And people are like, can we use your bathroom? We're like, no. So, but one of the jobs that we had is, and that's just one of them. I have maybe four other bits, is she would aggressively try to get us on America's Funniest Home Videos. Rest in peace, Bob Saget. As a job, she would write these bits or it'd be something that would happen organically that she would try to recreate later. Like my brother found one of her brawls. He's like, look, mom, knee pads. And in her head, like, that's the height of comedy.
Say it like you just thought of it. Say it like you said it before.
So we spent 2 days trying to capture that bit. And then the one from the special is that we're going to be making cookies in the kitchen, all of us kids. Kids are so messy. And then 2-year-old me, a lot of the bits fell on me. It was like the youngest, the smallest one. It's funny if the littlest one does something. I was going to drop a bag of flour. Reaching for something to land on my sister's head. But the nature of having children and trying to stage bits, and I don't think it's spoiling it. It takes a shit ton of takes to get it.
So great. And you're just staring at your mom the whole time.
So
you're
afraid. Like,
now I don't understand the joke.
It's like a great who's on first moment. Like, I don't think if I sat for 1,000 years in a room could write all the ways that the kids mess it up. It's such an organic, pure, just like they want to do good, but they just don't understand. And you start to feel her frustration at a certain point. It's like, fucking do it. Yeah. I was really happy that got cleared and made it in.
Did you, is there money to be made if your video gets on America's Home Video?
$10,000.
Oh, if it's the best one. If it's the best one.
But we never did that. We just got the appearance fee. So she was going for 10 grand.
Yeah. But you made it. You made it on.
We made it on, but that's not a win for how much time we put in. Because she would watch. She's like, if you do a Hit in the Nuts video, we would study it. This is like one show we were allowed to watch. If you do a Hit in the Nuts thing, you're just going to be put into a montage. You don't want to be put into a montage. If you're on Last Comic Standing and you do some whoops bit, you're going to be put in a montage. Yes. You want your own story.
Original concept. Yeah.
Right? So she's like, it's got to be something with dialogue. Because they have to stop down. They got to cut the music. So I would try to revolve around that. The one that she was a little anxious about was like, oh, the flower bit. Maybe there's enough. And that's why she's trying to get the lines right. I'm like, mom, can I help? But then they just took it and they put it in essentially the cold open montage, which is like, damn it, not eligible for 10.
That is such a, like, as we're sitting here, though, now I'm thinking of all of my favorite America's Home videos, because they're, the good ones are the greatest things ever.
Right.
They're, I mean, like, I can think of 10 of them right now. That really was a brilliant show.
It's like what TikTok is now. I mean, the most interesting things are on there. It's like, yeah, it's nice to sit down and watch, Breaking Bad, but just something is so entertaining about something that's real, something that happened. It's us. It's those rare moments that it's us. Yeah. So they were essentially YouTube before YouTube was a thing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Oh man, that's genius.
Yeah. So
your mom was the opposite of my parents, who were always like, enough already. Like, just,
do you think that's what got you into clowning business, is that you were taught to not be serious?
Well, not to be serious, just that it was kind of just like, the classic line of my dad's was, show off time is over. So it was like, they could take it like for that. They could take it 20 for 25 seconds and then it stop. So the idea of having, like, that was my dream as a kid, to have a mother that would be like, let's all get together. We're getting in the kitchen. We're going to do a bit. Like, that idea was what I thought I really wanted so badly.
Show off is over. It's such a dad line. That's, so you'd use that multiple. I think we ever got this. It's not a movie, so don't make a scene. That one was like, a little wordplay.
My dad would just give me the light.
That's why you got into it. You're
like, oh, okay. So like 2 minutes or 5 minutes? What does that mean again? I forgot.
You're nursing and he's giving you the light.
Wrap it up.
That's what was hard about the drive-in shows, is that's how we know how to get off stage, is the light. And people would flash their headlights or just have their running lights
right
off. So constantly people are like, get off.
I don't know why, but I loved those shows, the ones at Irvine, that I thought they were going to be terrifying, because the sound of a horn beeping is not a good thing.
You've only heard that in the context of, idiot, get out of the way.
Right.
It's very hard to reprogram your brain to now process that as a positive sound. I'm doing good.
We've never heard a symphony of them, you know, honking in unison, and all of a sudden it's this pleasant thing. I loved it. I did not expect to enjoy that, but it was great.
You should put out your special as a drive-in show, but in like 5 years from now, when people are well over it. What? That was this a pandemic thing? No, he did this now.
Yeah.
He loves it.
He's just got addicted to cars honking.
Yeah, it was hard to watch those ones. It's like comics I really like, but the ones that happened, they Amazon did car shows. And then they added laughs on top of the honks. So now the honks just sound like mistakes. For people that, like, you know, it's like a good hour they did for all cars. Never figure out the audio.
What are your interests other than comedy? What could you spend hours talking about?
Started skating, because it's the same thing of like, you could be a loner, right? You know, you could get good on your own. And then had stopped because you're just getting hurt. And then in the lockdown, just trying to do more things that match my face. Learned how to surf in the lockdown and really liked that.
Okay. I find
it was scary. It was like a way to get your adrenaline up, because the ocean, I mean, scares the shit out of me.
Yeah, me still to this day. I started skating a lot during quarantine, getting back into it, because I had my hip surgery and everything. But surfing, There's something about my, I think it's the fear of drowning more than sharks. Yeah. I'm just so.
Oh, me too.
And I've gone surfing probably 50 times and I feel like I'm not any better than it's the most frustrating, difficult thing I've.
And there's times you really get held down. Yeah, I needed it in the lockdown because one, it took a 4-hour chunk out of the day.
Yeah.
It just to get there, the wetsuit, all this shit.
It's
eating time. And it forced you to stay present because just wave after wave. And there were some really big days that probably shouldn't have been out. But yeah, you get held under for quite a while.
Whenever I'm taking off a wetsuit, I'm like, there's no way this is how you're supposed to do it.
Right?
The times as a child when I try and take my jeans off and I keep my shoes on out of laziness, and then you're just... You have to call your parents in because your shoes will not go over your pants won't go over your shoes. That's what every time taking off a wetsuit feels like.
This is a Fuse show, by the way, Karen. This is what we do. This is exactly the Fuse, every Fuse show.
Surf complaint with Chris and Moses.
If you've ever been feeling too good about your body, put a wetsuit on. Yeah. It's the shape that you are. I'm like, just stomach. And taking it off, it's uncomfortable. It's very embarrassing. I've pulled my shoulder it off.
I hurt my back taking one off.
You need to get in the water.
Yeah. You need dish soap. That's the only way to get around it. Cover your body in dish soap.
Surfers are not chill. Part of it was the lockdown, but that has not been my experience. The amount of fights that I've seen out there, and every grown man looks so stupid trying to fight on a floating board. But they were very hostile.
What were they fighting about?
The localism. Yeah.
Localism. There's only so many waves and there's too many surfers. So everyone's cutting everyone off.
Yeah, it is. That's one of the main reasons I never got into that. Skateboarding never had that. Hey, this is our turf. Maybe in movies where there's like a skate villain, like in Paul Blart Mall Cop or something. Yeah. But it's mostly pretty inclusive. And surfing, I've had grown men take a swing at me and I don't even know why, because I was in their way and I'm just trying to not drown. I didn't know that you were right behind me trying to catch the wave.
They're finite. It's like stage time. You know, there's only so many waves at the right shape, at the perfect time, at that certain moment. So on like a skate park that's always there, you could just go in the next turn.
Yeah.
You could be waiting 3 minutes or you could be waiting 25 minutes for the next wave.
A really good point. Yeah.
So it's like you just wasted 25 minutes because you're an idiot and you didn't look left. So I got it. I got a little hostile. I didn't take a swing at anyone.
Yeah.
But I did do some very sassy eye rolls.
Yeah.
I think I got the message across.
You again.
Yeah.
I do love that idea that it's counter to every piece of propaganda about surfers. Hey, man, that's cool.
Yeah,
not at all.
Aggro. No,
it's like Silicon Valley tech bros out there talking about NFTs. Yeah, it was hostile out there.
My favorite quote is Kyle Kinane's. He was like, surfing is like falling off a roof and having the house chase you. I always thought that was because when
sounds
you
exciting.
Yeah, waves are just so powerful, and like you said, they hold you under. I'm terrified of it.
Do you ever go to the beach? I feel like we live close, but we never go. And an hour in LA is not close.
Yeah,
right.
I used to live two blocks. I lived in Venice for years. I'm embarrassed that I didn't become a surfer. I was there for like 15 years, and I could walk down there. I am the owner of surfboards. But I just never, I don't know.
And now it's a whole thing. It's like I want to work out for an hour and it's going to take an hour to get down there, 30 minutes change in and out, hour to get back. And now traffic is back, so it's even worse. Yeah, I haven't really kept up.
So surfing is your main thing?
It was in the lockdown. And I think that's what I want to be known for. And it's not a surprise. This is the first time I've ever done it, but people just presume I already do that. So, and then even people in the water, they would let me go because like, this guy's going to be good. And then you see him get disappointed in real time.
But why do you have that hair?
Right.
You have such surfy hair. Your hair looks like a wave.
But ever since I've been working on the special and then I, had to edit the whole thing. I did all the graphics, everything for it. So I there has been no time. I haven't done anything.
I watched a lot of your preparation. It seems like they left everything, including finding all that stuff to paint white, the stage. Why were they so hands off? Or is that kind of how you wanted it?
I was asking for a lot, so I had to be prepared to do a lot. I think if you get a special, what is provided for you is there's going to be a curtain, there's going to be three purple lights,
right.
And there's going to be a jib camera that's going to swoop in on your texting jokes. But I wanted not that camera. I wanted fancy Mimi film cameras, and I wanted a set that I wanted to build that would double as a screen. So
yeah,
granted, they got more, but I was like, I'm asking for more, so I'll put the work in to do it. So I built the set, but I had people help me out too, like actual crew guys help me screw things in.
Looks amazing. Yeah. I saw your model for it and everything, and you going to thrift stores and buying all that stuff and spending a lot of money on what appears to be junk.
Yeah.
But really? It really worked out. It really looked amazing. Yeah.
It's funny that I used everything my mom taught me, everything I was running from as far as collecting junk off the streets, haggling with people. It always made me so uncomfortable. Just in the process of putting the special together, came around to even more forgiveness, just having to set this up. Yeah. I'm like, oh shit, I did learn some skills. They're not, you know, it's grifting, but still skills.
It's beautiful full circle.
Yeah. Yeah. And you didn't have to tell anyone to go. They're going to hell.
I did feel it's healthy. They didn't make the behind the scenes footage, but yeah, I'm sure at the point. I told Conan he's going to hell.
The whole crew.
I said, God cursed you with that red hair and skin.
That's a sign.
Well,
this is awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being here with us.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much for giving me a ride.
Yeah, I'm proud of you. Yeah.
You guys have completely abandoned the whole hook of the show.
Yeah, for now.
Can't do it.
And now we're addicted to not being in a car. But we will. We'll be back in the car soon and you can...
We'll be back. We just can't get in the car and then be like, we know for sure we won't give you a terrible disease.
Yeah.
Right. We won't dramatically change your life forever.
Just like in the beginning, Chris is like, we can still do it in the car. And we were... me, Chris, and Steven were all like, yeah, we can still, it's fine. And then it was like, no, it'll take one time. And we'll give it to one person and then we'll totally regret it.
Yeah.
I immediately backtracked my thoughts. I was like, oh, just get like an open air Jeep. And then the audio was shot.
Everyone's just yelling into their lungs.
Unlistenable.
Yeah.
No, I appreciate you having me. Yeah, I'm doing anything and everything to, you know, try to get the word out about this special. So yeah, well, I appreciate you giving me a shot.
Give it your official plugs. I don't even think we've said the name.
Oh, yeah. It's called Trash White and it's streaming on HBO Max right now. And it's the story of my whole life. And you get to see all the stuff that I built, all the junk from the streets of Los Angeles. Made on stage.
It's great. It's stand up, but it's also like amazing storytelling. I haven't even it was different than what I've seen you do on stage. It was really special. I wish I had a better word than special.
I'm just so happy that people have responded to it so well. Yeah. Because when I watch it, I hate it. Because I'm upside down on it. I mean, I've been involved in every single detail that all I can see are the flaws. The things I wish I would do better. But people's response to it this week in a non-humble brag way, that has blown me away. And I don't know, made me like it a little bit more.
That's so great. So watch Trash White on HBO Max with Moses Storm. Thank you for being our guest today, Moses. You're the best, man. You've been listening to Do You Need a Ride? DYN.
AR.
This has been an Exactly Right production.
Produced by Casey O'Brien. Mixed by Ryo Baum.
Theme song by Karen Kilgareth.
Artwork by Chris Fairbanks.
Follow the show on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Dynar Podcast. That's DYNAR Podcast.
For more information, go to exactlyrightmedia.com.
Listen, subscribe, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you.
Oh, and you're welcome.